Back, early Sherry Elliker show. Greg Tomlin in for Sherry. Sherry's in Palm Springs. Or taking care of her mom, or what the message was. But either way, it's great. Teeny Tiny's here. Got to choose that letter of the day. You can write to us at myNorthwest.com, although Andrew says no one does. You can come in the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line at 1-888-973-5476. Thank you, Teeny. Potato, back to you. Say potato to her, please, or Greg.
Hello.
It's say potato.
Sorry, I was reading something on Google.
Just say potato.
I missed that whole introduction.
Just say potato. Just
potato.
There you go, diving in the dark!
You guys are crazy.
You always have that look on your eye, like you've fallen into Alice in Wonderland world. Like, you know,
the eyes gloss over.
What the heck's going on over there?
That's accurate.
Not gloss over, like, you know, confusion glossing over, not like boredom. A U.S. colonel predicts that humanoid AI robots will be fighting the wars in 2030. Well, that's good news for everybody that would possibly have to go fight a war. The robots will be able to fire weapons, take out other robots, and then wars could go on forever and ever and ever and ever, as long as you're not having people come home in body bags.
Yeah, so there's this panel discussion called Humanoids or Augmented Humans Accelerating Autonomy with AI at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin. This colonel named Denemy has suggested that tech could be effectively deployed within a decade, what you're talking about here. And yeah, of course it's concerning. I don't know. Has there been an advancement beyond the atom bomb in terms of what weaponry can do in terms of kill count?
Oh, kill count? Or
I mean, in a single incident? I mean, what worries me is that human nature never changes, right? There will always be wars and rumors of wars, but the technology advances. We get more creative with how we can kill each other. Yes. And that's ultimately what we're talking about when it comes down to
but
brass tacks.
But isn't it odd when it comes to, like, the war, the rules of war and engagement? Like, you can use the atomic bomb, but you can't use gas.
Yes.
You're allowed to use the atomic bomb, but
before.
You can't use, like, a biofuel. You can't use a bioweapon. You
mustard
can't use germs.
Mustard gas is a crime against humanity. And then I'm watching all these World War I documentaries, and I was like, well, what did mustard gas do? Well, if you're exposed to it, it'd mess up your skin and you could go blind. And I'm like, how is that worse than shrapnel ripping off the legs of somebody and then bleeding out
right.
on the battlefield?
But these are the rules. That
yeah.
We'll,
yeah. Like, that's too far. That's yeah. one step
no
too
germs,
far.
No germs, but, you know, we'll have other things like cluster bombs. And
that one's super illegal.
Like, who comes up with that sort of stuff?
It's bizarre. I concur, and I've thought about that at length, and I don't understand the differentiation. You know, this is apropos. Oppenheimer was the big winner at the Oscar ceremony. I know you love movies. I know you love Christopher Nolan movies, in fact.
Can't get enough of them.
But yeah, look, we've seen this movie before, Terminator 2, where robots are fighting in the future. A lot of those dystopian future movies, it's just a matter of time before that all comes to pass. We're seeing this play out in real time with the war in Ukraine, where they're using drones. I know we're going to get to that story next, yep, but yep, they're becoming yep. absolutely ubiquitous on the battlefield. And in one sense, it's saving lives. And in another sense, it's killing a lot of bad guys or
but
vice versa.
Let's look at it from a big view. If we have robots, let's assume it happens, right? You got robots fighting. Now, I don't have any skin in the game. It's not my kid over there fighting. You know, remember they passed the law that you were, if you had three brothers, all three brothers couldn't be drafted because there was a horrible story of four brothers that all got killed.
Mm-hmm.
So then they said, okay, maybe there's two brothers or something. They both can't be drafted. So if you don't have a kid and that kid is not out there fighting and you're not having to deal with someone knocking at your door at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's just a war going on between robots, we'd be like, what's going on with the robots? You check in every once in a while. Like,
I think the
what are you
concern
fighting
is
over?
Battle bots.
One nation has the robots and maybe another does not.
Well, that's a movie.
Well,
right? There's a movie.
And you're touching on another interesting fact, which is a determining factor in the outcome of wars is who's winning the arms race.
Yes.
One of the reasons the Germans were so successful, at least initially in World War II, is they had these panzer divisions that were able to execute blitzkrieg, and it was nothing like the world had ever seen before, and it took everybody by surprise, and they conquered France in 6 weeks, and Hitler was this huge hero in Deutschland. Because, wow, we were used to World War I where we get bogged down in the trenches and hundreds of thousands of people die. All of a sudden, these technological advances are just blowing away the competition. We've got the Luftwaffe and these brand new shiny planes that are dropping bombs at will, and we're crushing it here. And then along for the Americans comes, what were their names? Fat Boy and Little Man or something, the atomic bombs.
Yeah, the two ones, yeah.
Yeah, thank God we got there first, right? Before our enemies did. And I think we're going to be in a similar scenario here in the future, whether it's Ukraine against Russia or what China might do with Taiwan. Who knows?
All right, I'm going to test your knowledge of history.
Oh, yes. Don't make it something super obscure.
No, it has to do with war and warfare.
Do we need Jeopardy music?
Let me set it up first.
Okay.
I was flying somewhere overseas, and it was a long flight, and this is, you could put your little headset in there and listen, and they would have, like, you know, music or whatever, and this one started with, like, and now for the 100th greatest inventions in the world, or 1,000 greatest inventions of the world that have changed the world. So I'm flying all the way to London or whatever, it's like, number 25. And I was like, okay, fine. So I'm waiting. I'm like, but I'm all in. I got a lot of time, all the way in. I'm like, and he's like, and number 17. I was like, oh, okay, getting close. All the way, we're there. We're coming. I could tell we're coming down. My ears starting to pop a little bit. And the guy goes, and that is number 2. And now to the one invention that changed the world forever. This was...
This is your cap speaking. I just let you know we are going to be making our approach. So
we got a door plug failure up here.
And we're going to be coming in about 15, 20. We're going to be a little early, winds around the north. I'm like, oh my God.
Maybe the recording that I was listening to would stop when he comes on. But no, because they're gone. And that was the invention that changed the world. I was like, oh, I sat through 7 hours of this stuff. What is it?
That's
so
amazing.
On the way home, all the way through, the number one invention that changed the entire world. I'll give you some hints.
I don't even need one. I'm just going to go with my gut.
You will never, ever, ever get it. If you want, you can guess once and I'll give you a hint.
What does he get if he gets it?
That's Snickers.
Okay. Hold on.
No, stop!
No,
you can't Google!
Let's see. The Snuggie. I was going to say the printing press. Is it not the printing press?
It was...
It's your cow speaking. We are coming in now. So if you look out to the right side...
The stirrup.
The stirrup?
Yeah.
Oh, the stirrup.
Okay, you want to know why?
On a horse?
Yeah, on a horse.
Okay.
So prior...
Thanks, Joe. I was lost.
Because prior, you put your foot in the stirrup and swing your leg over. Prior, when wars were being fought and someone was on horseback, they were easy to pull off the horse. You could actually stand there. The guy would come by with his big spear or whatever, and you could grab him and pull him off. It was much harder to ride the horse and direct the horse when your feet were not in stirrups. So this guy, according to his theory, the stirrup, the small little brass or whatever they made the metal out of that hooked onto the saddle that would help keep you on sooner. So then he takes you through every single major battle that occurred when the first, and it was, I don't know which group was fighting what group, but it was through Mesopotamia and these other ones that took all this land. And then because the one group had the stirrup, they got more land, they got more power, they did this and that and that and that. And it changed the entire dynamics of who was fighting and what part and who got what country and what, you know, who lost and who won on the thing. And it was like, golly, well, that was well worth it on the flight back.
I'd put
the stirrup.
Mop and Glow at 55, and I'd put that at 67. That sounds like an outdated list to me. I mean,
the stirrup.
I don't know. You did a good job of selling it, but number one?
Hey. That's some guy on the plane.
Some dude. All right,
fine. Let's see. By the way, and then also when AI is doing this and drones are bombing, I talked to a Green Beret guy on Saturday, and he was explaining to me that the PTSD is completely different now. And he explained to me, here's why. He said, you're sitting in an air-conditioned office in Virginia, and people are laughing and drinking coffee, and you're on. And you have this device which allows you to zoom in, and you're zooming in. You go right in. You can see the guy's face that you're going to drop this bomb on. You can see the guy's face. He's standing there talking, and it's close up. The camera's right on this guy. And people are like, hey, I can't believe the Patriots lost. And so you're in this normal world, right? You're surrounded by everybody else. But then you have this device in your hand and you zoom in and then press the button and the thing releases and then you see the guy kaboom. So it's a totally different experience where you used to just up from underneath the bunker fire off and some come back. Maybe somebody gets an extra shot. But he says it's a different PTSD experience for these people that are fighting because they're not in a fight or flight mode as you are if you're out in the battlefield, right? You see what I'm saying?
They're just sitting ducks almost, yeah.
Right, but you're sitting there in an office.
Yes.
And he says it's different and they don't know how to help people that are in there zooming in, pressing these buttons on these people.
That's, yes, I could totally see how that would be an all new type of PTSD. I come from a military family. My grandpas were Marines. My dad was a Marine. My brother went to the Naval Academy, became a Marine pilot. And I would always ask him, you know, why did you want to fly? And he said, look, the thought hasn't escaped me if I get called up for war. And he, you know, legit said this. He said, you know, if I'm flying in a plane, you watch in the movies, they don't have to look at anybody. They right. just go flying by. They can drop the big one if they need to, or they can get in dogfights or whatever. And lo and behold, you know, he got called up for Operation Iraqi Freedom, and he was one of the guys hovering over the skies while the Marines were on the ground, and they would call in stuff to right. him. And they would give him coordinates, and he would drop something.
Right.
And that's all he knew about it. And so nowadays, when you have these unbelievable drones or you have these 4K footage, it's changed the nature of warfare completely. And killing another human being is such an inhuman act. And that's why traditionally when you go through something like boot camp, right, they treat you so terribly and you have to get this image in your mind that the enemy is not even a person. Like they're lower than an animal because in order to kill someone, you almost have to view them that way. And so if you're sitting in an air-conditioned office and can get an up-close view of a fellow human being and just go, if I press this button, I will extinguish a life. I can't imagine the moral conundrum or dilemma you might be going through in your head and the trauma yeah. that might come afterwards. Not saying that's a reason not to do it, but it's just a whole new dynamic that we have no experience with until now.
One of the terrorists, I think, I don't know where this guy was. Oh, it might have been in Gaza. I think we might. No, it wasn't Gaza. It was a terrorist that we went after. And the new device that was shown, the Wall Street Journal had it. So the guy that they were targeting, because it's important only to hit him, he's in the passenger seat. And the car is at a stoplight. And this thing goes through the right side of the vehicle. And when it hits into the vehicle, it razor blades fly out and spin around rapidly and just...
carving
up the guy on the right.
Yeah.
The driver's still alive. And they're able to, that's the guy we want to get, just that guy. So they just drop this thing, goes through the roof of the thing, spins around, and then that's the end of that guy. Because it's just that one guy. Not anybody else, not driver, anyone else. So the United States going to great lengths to be able to target just the person they want to get, as opposed to going in and blowing up a whole bunch of stuff, to the extra care that you take to just get your target.
Do you think asking on a personal...
They always use the term neutralize.
Yeah. That's well, term. That's the language
neutralize
you use.
Neutralize the target, right?
Much better than murder, death, kill. Do you think you could ever do that if you were in that position, John? If you were ever called up, if you ever conscripted in the next big world war?
I think you have to, like, if they're going to get that guy, you have to be able to say, well, he was the one responsible for planting incendiary devices. He was the one that was in charge of this, in charge of that. He's the one that did this and that, right? Like when you talk about when Trump came out and talked about Abu Bhabi or Dhabi, and he died like a dog.
right.
We called him doggy dog, you know, so bad. We killed him bad, right? He cried like a baby he is. That guy, if you know all the people that have been taken and you know all the lives, you know all the threats, you sort of build up all this stuff in your head. I mean, people do it now with political points of view. Well, that guy's horrible. He's Hitler. So he's so horrible, he's like Hitler. So you get the idea. Remember this thing when Trump got elected in 2016? It was a big debate. Is it okay to punch a Nazi? Remember that whole thing?
I do, yeah.
And they go, okay, it's okay to punch a Nazi because that one guy who was like a white supremacist guy, I forget his name, he, you know, somebody walked up and punched him.
Oh, the guy in Seattle.
Was he a Seattle guy?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah, right. So it's like you vilify the person to the point that then they represent this stuff, and then it's okay to go ahead and slap him or punch him or shoot him because they represent something.
Yes.
So the idea of, like, is it okay to, would have been, if you could go back in time, would you have killed Hitler in his crib?
Could you?
I couldn't even kill a deer.
Yeah,
well, see, that's what I worry about.
I'd have to build it up big. I'd have to go, that guy's a horrible guy. And the other thing is, like, if you don't kill him, he kills you, right?
If we're not careful here, we're going to get into just war theory here in a second. But you remember, historically speaking, again, when they cracked the Enigma code, they basically knew where and when the Germans were going to attack because they broke their code and they could intercept all communications. So, but the people in charge then had to go, wait, if we start thwarting all the attacks that they've planned, they're going to know we broke their code.
Right.
So we can't thwart all the attacks.
Yes.
We have to hand pick who we're going to allow to live on our side and who we're going to allow to die. I know those decisions had to be made. I just don't know how fellow human beings made those decisions. And I could never do it. Like, we're going to sacrifice that ship so they know we didn't break their code, but we're going to save this ship over here. Just a nightmare scenario.
Well, it's the same philosophy, the same thinking that went in. We can drop the bomb. The Enola Gay can drop the bomb, and the war will be over. If not, we have to fight in the Philippines,
That's
and 100,000 Japanese will die.
We'll have to invade Tokyo.
They won't quit. They won't quit. How many lives will we save, both Japanese lives and American lives and the rest of the Allies, if we drop this bomb?
And it's an argument that's still not settled. And
don't forget, the greatest invention was...
The stirrup.
The Swiffer.
Duly noted.
Thank you. He's got my back, but will he follow me over to Bucky's Auto Service Centers? You know, they've got 16 locations. They've been around for 53 years. It's the Bucky's Auto Service Centers.
I like that thing you did with your voice there.
Thank you.
It made me want to utilize Bucky's.
There you go. Exactly. After Jesse takes you back. There is a license plate that you may or may not have seen while driving along. And often those license plates are like, oh, look at that. And you're trying to figure it out. You're like, what's it? Oh, I get it.
Right. It's a riddle wrapped inside an enigma in a question mark. Yeah, I got it. And I never figure them out. I'm terrible at that.
There's a white Mazda pickup truck, and the license plate says I, and there's a dash, and then one, this.
Okay.
I won this.
I'm tracking.
A white 1985 Mazda pickup truck.
The plot thickens.
Want to hear how they won it?
You don't want me to wildly speculate?
No. You never guess.
The Price is Right. Showdown, 1985.
Better.
Okay. Oh, really?
Better than that.
Okay, this is getting exciting.
Scott Fitzsimmons was quite the athlete in grade school and high school. He was a gymnast and college. He also played some baseball, so he's a good athlete. Not a big guy, but a good athlete. He enters a contest that Mazda was having for a home run derby. If you could hit a home run at the Kingdom in front of everybody on the 28th of September 1985 on Fan Appreciation Night, you would win this Mazda. They picked 22, and they narrowed it down to just four contestants that would be competing on the 28th of September. Scott Fitzsimmons knows that on that particular day, he's going to the Kingdom to try to hit a home run in the Kingdom and win this Mazda. His horoscope on that day says, today you will win something. He shows up in Kent a couple of hours earlier just to get sort of the butterflies out and hit a few. And while he's there, these two guys are like, hey, we'll shag him for you. So they're shagging him. Where are you going? Scott says, oh, I'm going over the Kingdom to try to win a Mazda. And they said, oh, good luck. He arrives at the Kingdom that evening. The stands are full. And the two guys that were shagging with him earlier in Kent are the two guys he's competing against. Three of them don't get it. He's the fourth guy up. The first pitch, he hits into the outfield. The second, a pop fly. He says to the Mariners pitching coach, Phil Roof, put it right here. Put it right here. Points. Phil nods his head, okay, and throws it in. It comes in tight and high and brushes back Scott. And the crowd goes, whoa, like he's trying to hit him. Scott looks at Phil, smiles, points again where he wants it, and throws it. Scott Fitzsimmons turns on that ball. He says, I didn't even feel it, but I saw it all the way out to left field. And it just so happens his friend who had bought a seat to that game is sitting in that chair, reaches out and catches the ball. Fitz runs around, gets to the second base, looks up at the crowd, and they're going absolutely crazy. To third base, he jogs along, comes home, and when he gets to home plate, he does a round-off backflip onto home plate, and the place goes nuts. They give him his white Mazda pickup truck. They drive it around the field. And when he gets to his seat, of course, he's on cloud nine at this point. His friend goes, "Hey, I caught your ball. I just happened to be sitting in the seat where you hit it." And he still has the truck to this day. He's got the ball. He's got the license plate. And he has his horoscope. He saved all of those things. Crazy. Is that nuts?
That's unbelievable.
He told me that story yesterday.
The only thing more incredible than the story itself is the way you just told it on the air.
I need you to tell my kids' bedtime
stories. I need them bouncing on your knee as you go into great detail.
Well, I got to get Andrew to run the music
for me. That's unbelievable.
You knocked it out of the park.
Mike, I was getting emotional listening to that.
But you know what's amazing? It's like everything lined up for
him.
Yeah,
the stars aligned.
Everything lined up. And there happened to be a Major League Baseball scout that was sitting in the stands. He's watching and stuff because you're looking for other players. And he went over to Scott and said, "You know what? I knew you were going to do that. I knew you were going to hit that." He said, "Because I saw you warming up ahead of time. I saw the way, how seriously you're taking this. I could also see you were loose enough. I was watching you. And when you got up, I thought, he's just got to wait for the pitch." But when he pointed, where Phil Root, the pitching coach, when he pointed right here, and Phil nodded like, okay, because they want somebody to hit the thing.
Yeah.
They want a home run.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, in the kingdom, turn on that ball and hit out to left field. Pretty crazy.
That's insane.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Sometimes reality is stranger than fiction. The only thing that would have made that better is if his dad had come on the field at the end and he would have said, "Hey, Dad, you want to have a catch?" Field of Dreams reference, anybody? Never mind.
So he did
horrible
see,
movie.
Did you see the truck?
No. No. I just saw the license plate.
How'd you see the license plate?
Because he sent me a picture of it.
Oh, okay. I got you.
No, I was talking to Fitz yesterday. He's got this thing he's doing with these monster garages where they build these garages for super rich people and they can put all their cars in these garages and stuff. So he's got those things.
So how do you explain it, like you said, where the stars just align, the universe tilts on its
axis? How do you get the horoscope?
All of these things just happen like it was fate or destiny from the very beginning.
Yeah, the other one is his buddies in the thing. It wasn't like he went down there to try to catch it.
Yeah.
That was his seat. He paid for that seat.
The closest I've ever gotten to that was today when I was caught in that traffic backup.
Hey, some dramatic music for this, please. Hold on.
I leave the house with plenty of time to get here.
Wow.
Before the show starts.
Yeah. Wow.
I did stop at Taco Time for a crisp taco. That was probably a mistake.
All right. That's all right.
Already, this is subpar.
No, we're in.
I get onto I-90 West.
Yeah.
And I look up.
Mm.
And what do I see?
What do you see?
Thousands of rearview mirrors looking at me. A backup beyond the eye can see. And dread overcame me.
Yeah.
Unlike I've ever felt in my entire life. I'm looking at my Waze app thinking, is there any alternate routes I can use to get to work? I'm never going to be asked to guest host ever again on the John and Sherry show.
Right.
Waze says I'm going to get there at 2:30. That 2:30 goes to 2:40, then to 2:50, then to 2:58. I look to my left. I see the carpool lane is wide open. And I think, could I talk my way out of a ticket right now? It doesn't matter.
Right.
I pull into that carpool lane, and then that got backed up. And this story seems to keep on going on and on. I'm not sure if...
And you changed lanes erratically, and you ran into a 1985 white Mazda.
Help me, John, help me.
You ran into a white Mazda pickup truck, smashing the car beyond repair. And a license plate broke off and landed on the ground, and it said, "I won this."
And now you know the rest of the story.
There you go.
So, yeah, I think mine was just as good. I did get here on time. I did cut off a semi-truck to make it happen.
Scott Fitz, I know you're listening. He's a big fan of the show. And that story, you told that one yesterday. I was like, oh, my God, I got to tell the story.
Unbelievable.
By the way, we'll put up the pictures. So if you ever see, he still drives it. I don't know how many miles he's got on the thing, but he loves the car and the story behind the car. And how could you? We could never get rid of the thing.
No,
it's so funny
not.
When he talks about, like, I turned on that ball. I didn't even feel it. I didn't hear it. But I knew as soon as I made contact on it. I mean, if you were on second, wouldn't you stop and, like, look at everybody? You're never going to be out there again. Yeah. You're never going to be on that field. You'll never hit a home run like that.
The Kingdom, too. So iconic. Oh, that AstroTurf.
That weird kind of chalky concrete smell in the whole place.
The ship in right field.
Let's blow it up and build a new stadium, even though we still had a bond to pay for. One thing to be a hunter, but it's another thing to actually get involved and actually make sure that what you're shooting at is good. Mm. So, like, this guy that is now actually creating, I said actually like three times, the guy in Montana that is pleading guilty is scientifically breeding monster sheep for hunting.
An 80-year-old rancher.
Is he doing it so that they're big and slow and they can't defend themselves in any way? Are they going to be like gigantic with a lot of meat on them with very small legs?
So he bred this Franken sheep after attaining some sperm and testicles from the world's largest sheep, and it had to come from Kyrgyzstan. I don't know what part of the dark web you have to access to get into this world. But I don't want to be privy to it.
Amazon has it.
Okay, so he breeds this Franken sheep, and it's huge in more ways than one. And then he sold the sperm from this sheep, which is highly illegal, to other ranchers, and he's facing up to a 5-year sentence for doing this. I mean, the little details in the law just know no bounds. I had no idea this was against the law or that anyone would even want to pursue doing this in the first place. I'll make a comparison, though, which I think is apt and relevant. Are you following at all that Alec Baldwin case with the armorer and how he shot his director of photography set?
Yes, yes.
So his armorer was just found guilty.
Right.
And I don't know if it was negligence or what necessarily the charge was, but she bears some responsibility in the death of the director of photography.
Involuntary manslaughter.
Yes. Do you know what the maximum prison sentence for her is?
The maximum.
Keep in mind, this guy who bred the Franken sheep, 5 years. He's facing 5 years.
He's doing five. So she's manslaughter third degree, so she's looking at a year and a half.
To the T. You nailed that. It was 18 months.
Yeah.
And I just thought, okay, the discrepancies in the law are strange to me because a human being lost a life. And I know she didn't pull the trigger and everything, but I thought 18 months for that? That's going to be the accountability. And then this guy bought some huge sperm and testicles and is breeding the sheep, and he's going to be locked up for a long time.
Half a decade. Did they send him to 5 years?
Oh, okay. She faces up to 18 months.
Right.
Yeah. I just thought that was bizarre.
He'll get himself a good lawyer and get out of it. Let's see your knowledge of the Northwest.
Oh, boy.
It's an island that was purchased by a couple of taxidermists in the 1960s.
Okay.
And they brought exotic animals in, and they invited hunters to come to fly in and to pay for the privilege of hunting lions and tigers and giraffes and rhinos and monkeys, to name just a few. They would then be stuffed and shipped back home as trophies. Did you know that? Spiden Island. In the Northwest.
Spiden Island. Yeah. Did I know that that existed even? Where is that?
You'll see it if you were ever on you're heading out there.
Sounds like the island of Dr. Moreau.
Very similar. So Spiden Island is a final island. It's a homestead. You can see it if you're on a ferry out near the San Juans.
I love watching
it's off
you
to the right
your
side.
Phone.
It's off to the right side. And I remember when we did a story on the thing. I think there's a few animals that are still on there. Nothing that exotic. But people found out about it. They said, well, that's horrible.
Yeah.
They're all trapped on this island and the people are going to pay the money. So it was only for a little while until word got out. And then they said, okay, mate, never mind. No giraffes, no tigers, nothing like that.
Bad sportsmanship.
Yeah.
Come on. If you're going to try to hunt big game, you got to go to where the game is. Go to a little island in Washington to hunt the tiger.
But isn't that how all the animals got there in Swiss Family Robinson? I always wonder how they had zebras and lions and tigers and stuff like that. Maybe that used to be a fantasy
of
a lot of people. Is bring a bunch of wild. That is the movie's not. That's not a documentary.
Because Noah got them all first.
Thank you. Okay, nice tie in there.
My friend Larry said, "Hey, you want to go hunt for a deer?" I said, "Sure." And there was a bunch of deer. He said, "You're going to shoot it right off the back porch of my house." I was like, okay, so I got there at 6 in the morning, and he gets the gun all set up, explains this is one deer that we're going to take out because it's an older deer. I said, okay, well, I got to go to work after this. He goes, oh, no, we're going to field dress it. Then we're going to take the meat, and then we're going to grind the meat.
Was your friend Ernest Hemingway?
He's a very serious hunter. And then I said, he goes, at least like four and five hours from the time we shoot it. I said, I don't have time for that. I was like the guy trying to win a Cupid doll or something. Right. Just shoot, and then you get the big, you know, stuffed animal, and you walk away. He's like, oh, no, no, no. If you shoot it, you're going to have to do all that. It's like, forget it. I feel like Greg Talman just stop off at Taco Time or Bell.
Excuse me?
Wherever you stopped off to get something before you got
my
on your arduous drive
I was
here.
Into the story, though.